Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
Beam me up on the mamas of all mama shit.
Hey, I'm looking through my telescope and I see a mothership. Is that you? Beam me up.
Hey, D.A., I'm thirsty, man. Can you beam me up for a cold one?
Hey, D.A., what's going on, baby? Stop me off and beam me up.
D.A., what's the silly old permission to get in that mothership?
Is my window seat still available? Beam me up.
What's going on, D.A.? Hey, man, I need you to do me a huge favor. My coworker's a jerk. Oh, just beam me up, man.
Get beamed up. Everyone else has. It's DA on CBS Sports Radio.
And a happy Wednesday morning to you, boys and girls. We come to you live from the O'Reilly Auto Parts studios. O'Reilly Auto parts, better prices every day. Very excited about our next guest. It's never too early to talk college football around here. We're all college football fiends on the DA show. And Yogi Roth, a former wide receiver at the University of Pitt Panther, now a member of the Pac-12 Networks as an analyst there, worked under Pete Carroll at USC, and he joins us in studio. Yogi, good morning.
This is awesome, man. The intro was pretty impressive.
Thanks. Yeah, it makes us sound way more important than we are.
No way, man. Hey, you're a Syracuse guy. Big importance.
Yes, thank you. Yes, thank you. Flattery will get you everywhere. Here's the question as the seed of Nestor tweets, DA, great show, but why are you guys ripping a job that pays $58 an hour? It sounds out of touch. We just did a story where Sharice Wright of the Chicago Bears lands at O'Hare in Chicago. He's got to get to Buffalo for his Bills OTA. He gets an Uber. The Uber costs $630 to get out there. He tips $300. That's about a $932 fee fare for the Uber driver. But he's got to drive back 8 hours. So that's a 16-hour round trip. You've got to, if you're an Uber driver, you've got to pay for maintenance on your car, your own gas, your own food and everything. Would you drive to Buffalo and back to Chicago for $900? It comes out to about $50 an hour, which sounds good, except you've got to subtract gas, subtract your own food.
Yeah, well, I'll tell you that. I coached Sharice Wright at USC, so 1,000% I would do. We had a great conversation. Okay. We go down memory lane. We talk about Coach Carroll, 4 Rose Bowls, 1,000%.
Okay, so you do it.
For him, I'd do anything.
I mean, I guess you have to eat anyway, no matter where you're working, but $900 to drive 16 hours, I mean,
I would have filmed it. That's what I would have done. It would have became, you know, we don't got Facebook Live. It would have, some sort of content would have came out of that.
You definitely were thinking content. Totally, right there. Yeah. A man after my own heart right there. So this year, the Pac-12 is fascinating because we're already wondering if the Jets are tanking for Sam Darnold because they cut David Harris and Eric Decker yesterday. Looks like they're going to be bad. And everybody thinks that Sam Darnold is going to be the presumed number one pick, the number one quarterback coming out of USC. Let's start with Darnold and what you see from him. What have you seen thus far, very early already in his college career?
Yeah, well, I can remember when Sam had one offer. It was University of Utah as a sophomore. His coach called me and he said, you got to take a look at this guy. He came to Elite 11 after his junior year. He was injured majority of his junior year. And I can remember standing with our staff, Trent Dilfer is the head coach, and we looked at him. I said, doesn't he kind of remind you Andrew Luck? Just the way the ball comes out, his athleticism. And you knew from jump. And I got to give Steve Sarkisian the credit because when he signed him, he pulled me aside and he said, I think he's going to go to New York twice. Once for the Heisman and once for the draft if it was still here.
Really?
And I would agree with that wholeheartedly. I think that's the type of student-athlete that Sam is. When you dive into his background and how he was raised, you know, he's got such a unique work ethic that's been developed by his parents and kind of an aw shucks element about him. You know, you think SoCal quarterbacks, a lot of times we think, okay, these guys are surfing, they're living a high life.
Pretty boys.
And that's not him, you know? I mean, he's got great hair because he is a San Clemente guy and does love the ocean, but Sam is as grounded of a kid as I've been around in my entire career. His skill set is very unique. His ability to play in a phone booth, his ability to get the ball out, his ability to get on big stages and not flinch. You look at the touchdown last year in the Rose Bowl, he drops it over two safeties in a window about 6 inches wide and looks to the sideline immediately. If it was you or I or probably anyone else in the country, we'd be fist pumping. We'd be going crazy. You just scored a touchdown to tie the game up in your hometown. And he looked over, are we going to go for one or for two? And to me, that just caption of a moment for Sam encapsulated the personality he is. And I'm excited for him. I mean, this is a guy who's gone to work this offseason asking, why do players have second-year slumps? Asking the questions of, okay, how do I handle everything around this position of USC quarterback, being a Heisman candidate, et cetera. So I don't think the stage is too big. He's done the lonely work to prepare, and I think this team is primed for a big-time season, not only because of him, because of the middle of their defense.
When you say he's got a unique work ethic because of his parents, what do you mean?
Well, his folks are really grounded, you know, and I think a lot of times in L.A., and this is my big thing around Southern California, why I think it's so much harder to
And you were an assistant there.
Yeah, as an assistant at SC, because let's just take you. Let's just say you're a five-star recruit, and you can go anywhere in the country, and you're from Los Angeles, and you decide to go to USC. Well, I know you now as your boy in high school or somebody who's loved you in your high school career as that five-star recruit. Now come on campus with a bunch of other five-star recruits, another a bunch of talented players, and if you don't love the game, if your work ethic isn't insane, if you're loving what the game does for you, which is social media, love from all your community members, or versus loving what you can actually do for the game and for the craft, you're going to be in trouble. And a lot of times that happens with kids at USC or even at UCLA, whereas I come in, and maybe I'm not that good, but I was overhyped as a high school kid, or maybe I don't do well with competition in my position group. So now I'm in this environment, and you're telling me how sweet I am because you know me from one era, but the truth of it is I got to really get to work. And that happens a lot there. And to me, the competitive cauldron that Clay Helton has created at USC and the mentality that that Sam has had since he was brought up in San Clemente by his family has allowed him to thrive in that environment and not worry about the competition, a la last year in Max Brown. He's worried about his performance. He knew when he'd get his shot, he would thrive. A couple games in, he does it. You go watch the Stanford game, and there's one throw you watch and say, he's going to start next week. And he did, and in a way they kind of went on the run.
Yogi Roth, Pac-12 Networks, joins us here on the show. The Pac-12 is probably the most interesting conference this upcoming season because of quarterbacks. Josh Rosen is another one at UCLA. There are question marks about his off-the-field demeanor and if he's totally committed to football. Do you think those are legitimate concerns?
Not a chance. I'd be curious, where do you think, you're in the chair on the East Coast, where do those come from for you?
Just via the media.
Yeah, so that's one hot tub tweet as a freshman, the Trump hat probably. But and I understand that, and he wears that, and he should. But
there's been stories written about that commitment without those two incidents kind of cited, right?
Fair, but I think when you look at Josh's mind, and he was this way coming out of high school, he's a guy that's going to question everything. That's just the way his mental makeup is. You know, this is a young man who grew up in a house with some really educated parents. He grew up in a house where he was asked and challenged to question and be curious about everything. And he kind of has gotten a wrap around that as, is he coachable, right? What's he like off the field? What's his personality like? I was just with him over the weekend. He was a counselor at the Elite 11. And again, knowing him, he and Sam, same class. They came in through the Elite 11 process and then obviously went to college. And to me, the silver lining for Josh was last year when he got hurt. Because let's just play it out again. He was number one recruit or number two recruit as a sophomore in high school at the quarterback position in the entire country. Meaning, spotlight, got to go win, you're the starter. Shows up on campus against UVA week one and blows up. He's on every channel. He's wins all Player Week awards from the minute he gets on campus. Point being, he never got a minute to breathe. Last year, he gets injured, misses the back half of the season, finally got a chance to just relax, kind of that redshirt year per se. And I think for him, talking to him just a couple days ago, it was the best thing that could have happened to him to just be able to take a breath because you do get going. And in this world of quarterbacking, I believe we set expectations that are fair to set on the field, but we forget that they're 19, that they're 20, and they're still developing as young men. And I think for Josh, he's gone through rough patches, and now kind of the mantra for him is every day 1% better versus let me try to do so much at one time. Let me try to change every perception right now. And that's kind of unrealistic. So I think what you're going to see this year is a really grounded kid who has evolved a lot because of the experience he's had at such a young age. And I think he's going to thrive. Those two guys, in my opinion, are top 10 draft picks at quarterback if they choose to come out after this next season.
So the Josh Rosen situation off the field is really interesting because I fall in line with, is it really a big deal if a college kid wants to have an inflatable hot tub in his dorm? I mean, we would all want to have done that right as a freshman. We're wearing a hat where he shouldn't have been wearing a hat. I mean, again, if I thought about some of the things that I wore in college, I mean, I would hope that nobody would judge my work ethic based on that. But is there something else? Is that the root, just those two incidents? Or did Josh Rosen have a lot of celebrity thrown at him? Did we all assume he was the next great thing? and that maybe he started thinking was the next great thing and then needed that grounding?
Well, I think that every quarterback has to think they're the next great thing, you know? I mean, whether you're thinking you're the best high school kid in the country or the best player at your position, I think that's the confidence that you have to have when you walk in. I think for Josh, being at a school in Los Angeles, being the top quarterback recruit in the country and having the success early, and then being dubbed, you know, even by anybody who's coached him, saying, yeah, of course, he's got the ability to be a number one draft pick, put that spotlight on him. I think for him, when you look at some of those decisions, agreed, we all would have loved to have a hot tub, or who knows what we wore when we were back in that age. I think the response is, well, be a GM. You know, you've got to make sure that you represent yourself well so they see you. And I think that's where Josh has kind of grown, of like, you know, I can't just do anything I want. And I think that goes for all athletes now in the era that we are, with our phone and the social media and the digital era that it is. And I think for Josh, he's not going to change the way that he thinks or views the world. I mean, he's a guy that is always going to look at it just a little bit differently. I think that's kind of the artisan soul, the artistic mind of him as a player. I don't think there's anything wrong with that, but I do think he's just kind of evolved as young men do. And being in Los Angeles and being a quarterback, you learn that if you tweet something or you say something, it's going to get blown up. And I think for him, he's never thought of it as that big of a deal, and then has obviously learned the hard way that everything you say or do can be perceived as a big deal.
Yogi Roth, Pac-12 Network, joining us to talk a little offseason college football. What is happening at Oregon? Because that was a powerhouse program competing for championships, fell on some hard seasons the last couple of years. Now they bring in Willie Taggart, a guy that's completely out of the family, that hasn't happened at Oregon since the 70s, bringing somebody from outside the family. What's happening there? How quickly can they get it back on track?
It's a great discussion and really interesting, because you look at where they were a couple years ago, right? They're playing for the national championship. It's Marcus Mariota. I think in college football, you're known for your head coach. In the NFL, you're known for your quarterback for the majority of organizations and programs. Oregon, you're known for your brand, right? It's the swoosh. And you know it all across the country. You probably know it all around the world just because of the marketing giant that they are. Here comes Willie Taggart. And the reality is, and I went up there in spring because, like, I got to see this thing in person. And they struggle personnel-wise. I mean, that's just the truth on the defensive side. Offensively, they'll put up points. They were number two rushing offense in the conference a year ago.
Defense was a mess.
And the challenge is that they weren't juniors and seniors. They were freshmen and sophomore. And that's okay because they got that experience. But I still look at that defense personnel-wise, and I see one surefire early NFL draft pick in Troy Dye. He was their outside linebacker, started as a true freshman. Other than that, I just don't think they have that Armstead. They have the type of players they've had in the past on the defensive front specifically, but they're crushing it in recruiting. So do I think it's going to happen this year? No. I think they got a chance to win six games because of the firepower and offense. The conference last year, teams that won conference games averaged 39 points per game. So they'll put up points. Royce Freeman, probably the one of the best backs coming back that we're never really talking about because of the poor season they had last year. Justin Herbert at quarterback. But what I love about Willie is that he is a total truth teller. He looks his guys in the eyes. He tells them where they stand, what they're about. The competition in all positions, including quarterback, is wide open. But more importantly, he's rebuilt two programs already, right? He did it at Western Kentucky.
Total credibility.
Did it at South Florida. So even talking to him in spring, he goes, you know, I know the stage that we're at right now in practice 12. I know where we need to be in June. I get where we are in recruiting. And the thing with them was, they get going, all of a sudden it's a firestorm because of that brand and what Nike and that swoosh and what Oregon's done in the past can do.
Yogi Roth joins us, Pac-12 Networks. We're talking off-season college football leading into some summer camps and stuff like that. He's going to stick around for the next break as well, for the next segment, and we're going to do a little 10 questions. This guy is one of the most interesting people in the world. Might as well be the Forrest Gump or Walter Mitty of college football analysts. So we're going to do that coming up here with him coming up next. Also, you can watch right now on our digital broadcast, watchda.com. More college football. Yogi Roth coming up next here on the DA Show on CBS Sports Radio.
In the simulation.
We're chewing Big League Chew with Patrick Mahomes.
You gotta kinda like spray it with your tongue and then kinda just blow the air underneath your tongue.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
21 minutes past the hour. Watch the digital broadcast by going to watchda.com. Available on your laptop, on your computer, or on your mobile device. It's mobile friendly, and you can be checking out Yogi Roth from the Pac-12 Network joining us in studio talking a little college football. Yogi, how are you at blowing bubbles? We had Patrick Mahomes in here before the draft, and he was a former baseball player, so I said, you could probably blow a big bubble, so we got some Big League Chew. Big League Chew let us down big time. Mm. Could not blow the bubble, neither one of us, so I feel like it was a gum fail, not an us fail.
Yeah, well, at my first job, I was a bat boy for the Red Barons, which is the Phillies AAA
team. Is that right?
Yeah, so it was seeds and gum. Like, it was my first exposure to a lot, including professional athletes.
Yeah.
You can imagine it, like, 13 years old, walking into the clubhouse, being like, what are they watching? What are they reading? What are they drinking and eating? It was, and it was also the first time that I was like, I think I could be a professional athlete. Like, this is kind of cool.
I always love when I'm covering a baseball game, you know, you sit back in the press box or you're in your seat, and I love baseball so much, and the grass is perfectly manicured and green, and the sky is blue, and the balls are white, and everything just feels perfect. And then you go into the dugout afterwards, and the whole ground is filled with spit and tobacco and gum and seeds. It's like the most grotesque place ever. It's almost like running a black light over a hotel bed. You know, you just don't want to see it. Isn't that dugout thing is just the worst thing ever after a game.
Oh, well, I was the guy that always had to clean it up. And I had the visitors clubhouse, so it was cool. So I'd see all the guys on rehab assignment from Major League Baseball, and they'd be coming down, and they'd be the Yankees AAA team or the Detroit Tigers or the Mets or whoever it was, and they'd roll in, and I had my little rag, and I'd clean all their spikes. And but it was really cool to be a kid and to be exposed to that, the professionalism, or maybe not, and just to see how pros operated. And they would screw with me. They'd be like, hey, can you go find me the rubber bat? And I'd be looking around for the rubber bat. Like, all the jokes were always on me. And the funnest part is that I used to pretend that I was a player. So I'd shag fly balls in, you know, pregame, and I'd have the same jersey on that they would have.
Yeah.
And fans would ask me for autographs. I'd be like, yeah, I just got called up from Double A, and they're making me bat boy tonight just because it's like initiation. I was like 12, 13, but I thought I was convincing people I was a pro athlete. I was like, I just want to try it out, see what happens.
That's awesome. Since you cover the Pac-12, I want to ask you, do you have a sleeper team in the conference for this football season?
Yeah, sure do. I think it's Oregon State. You know, Gary Anderson to me is the second biggest deal in Pac-12 history as a head coach, the first one being Chris Peterson. You know, what Washington did to get him. You know, let's just play it out. If Gary stays at Wisconsin for another year, he might be the head coach at SC or been offered that job. Probably would have been offered any job he wanted. It fits him beautifully. I've called a bunch of their games. And the opposite of Oregon, they played a lot of guys, but they're really talented at the outside backer position, specifically on defense. I love the intensity there. Again, the way he approaches his quote is, be big time. And you have to kind of raise up, and he'll tell you if not, and you can decide if it's for you or not. And he's such a gracious coach in that regard, where it's not, let me just be that, you know, tear you down to build you up guy. He's all about continually building, but it's not going to be easy because this conference isn't easy. And they've got a transfer quarterback. I'm really excited about this young man, Jake Lund. He's got all the tools. He's 6'6", came out of Ventura Community College in Southern California. Wouldn't be surprised if he started. They got some freshmen that can play at wide receiver. They can score points. I think they got a chance to start the season off 4-0, 4-1. They got an early conference matchup against Washington State, so we'll see what happens.
Before we get to 10 questions, about 30 seconds on Rich Rodriguez. Do you think that he's long for the Arizona job? Because we've heard rumors that maybe he won't be and he'll be somewhere else.
I don't know. I mean, I think that he's a guy that's always been really honest in terms of when jobs open up. You know, you look at the South Carolina thing a couple of years ago. You kind of love him in the media because he's like, yeah, I wanted to see what it was all about. But I think that he recognizes that he's in a really unique place that kind of fits his personality. You know, he was at West Virginia when I was at Pitt. We got to know each other when I was a player, and that place kind of fit his personality. Michigan clearly didn't. So I don't see him going anywhere unless he doesn't have the choice, right, in terms of their performance, and they have to perform better. I mean, look, last year was a disappointing season for them, and you know, they're a couple years removed from the South Championship and a Fiesta Bowl berth.
Right. Yogi Roth joining us, Pac-12 Network's time for 10 questions.
It's time for America's favorite game show, where we tell the studio guest what they should think. It's 10 questions, not taped in front of a live studio audience.
All right, we'll tell you whether you're right or wrong here. Number one, Yogi Roth, how many pieces of gum does Pete Carroll chew in one game?
I'm going to go 2 packs, so that's worth 5 per piece. I'll go 10.
We were looking for double digits. You were an assistant coach under Pete Carroll. That guy likes his gum.
Yeah.
What is the specific flavor?
You know, I think he's an original guy, but his favorite thing to do is he would have, like, the at the time, it was the equipment manager or somebody on the staff, they'd take out, like, a bunch of pieces or a bunch of packs and throw them all up at once, and he would try to catch as many as he possibly could in one hand, and that's just Pete. He's such a competitor at everything he does. It is literally the word for him. He is in a relentless pursuit of a competitive edge in everything that he does in life, whether it's catching gum or winning games or helping people develop who they are. I could talk about him forever. One of my favorite people on the planet.
So number two, piggybacking off that, if there was a pie chart to describe what it was like to coach under Pete Carroll, 51% to 49, more work or more fun?
More fun.
Really? More 51% more fun at least?
Yeah, I mean, look, everything about him was developing everyone underneath him. You know, I was the youngest coach when I came in at 23 years old. I was doing the grimiest of work, but I felt my voice was just as loud as Steve Sarkisian or Lane Kiffin at the time because he asked me. And I was the guy sleeping in the office a couple nights a week. I was getting my master's degree at SC as well. And he would sleep in the office a lot as well because he lived kind of, you know, 20, 30 minutes away from campus. So we would meet every night on Sunday, Monday, and Tuesday at midnight in my little area, which was kind of like the corner of the staff room. And we would talk about everything other than football. We would talk about politics. We would talk about philosophy. We would talk about developing an institution and organization. And that's really where I got to grow. And he took the clay that my parents developed and really molded it into having a clear style, vision, theme, and philosophy, which is the cornerstone of his book and his teams.
Hmm. Number three, which joke did you get more of growing up, Yogi Bear or Yogi Berra?
I got Yogi Bear, and then people kind of thought that I was named after Yogi Berra. And neither are true. I mean, it's an Indian name. I'm a Yankees fan because you just kind of have to with the name Yogi. And my thing is always, hey, it's my real name. I mean, Yogi Berra, love him. It wasn't his real name, man.
True.
So it's kind of fun. I've always kind of shrugged it off. And as a kid, I think it probably bothered me a little bit. And then I just asked him to play one-on-one and try to take him in the hole.
It's an Indian name.
Yeah. Yeah. So every kid in our house got an Indian name and a Hebrew name. Our mom is a refugee from the Middle East.
Wow.
And our parents studied Eastern philosophy. So my first name is Yogi, which is like you're practicing yoga. It means union. And my middle name is Zohar, which is Hebrew and means brightness. So each child, I have two siblings. That's kind of how we were named. So it was weird, but they were big on the power of your name and that it means something. And I try to carry that wherever I go. You know, I went to yoga class this morning in New York, got moving a little
nice.
Bit. Yeah, it was good.
Well, I'm sure talking Eastern spirituality and Hebrew with a lot of your college football teammates was very easy, right? A lot of those guys had a lot of the same similar backgrounds.
Yeah, totally.
Anybody want to talk about yoga around here? No, but okay.
But you know what was fun about that? And I truly believe this phrase that we all speak ball. You know, regardless of your background, your ethnicity, your religion, your color, your race, your political alignment, we could roll a ball out, whether you're in a locker room or whether you're in Cambodia, and you can unite. And that was for me as an athlete at Pitt. I would be going to church with all the fellas on the team. I would then go to a fraternity party, or then I would go to a Bible study. And I've always kind of been on that path of you got to seek, you know, and you got to be curious. And nobody's opinion's wrong. Just go have a discussion about them. And I think now, every Friday, I get to go on the college campuses with Pac-12 Network and talk to kids and literally have a conversation about storytelling. And it starts with, what type of listener are you?
Number four, who's the most annoying Pac-12 head coach of all time? There's only one correct answer here.
Is that Rick Neuheisel?
No. My former college. It's Jim Harbaugh.
Jim was great. I called a couple of his games when I was back at Fox. What I love about Jim...
At USC, come on. You guys had to have found him annoying.
You know what? We looked at it differently, and I think that comes from Pete. As you looked at it like your greatest competitor, you kind of appreciated them. It's like you wanted them to bring it. Yeah, of course you wanted to smoke them even more, but... to me, it wasn't annoying. And as a broadcaster now, I look at him and Chip Kelly in the same vein of, you got to come correct with your questions.
Fair.
You know, they're not going to take a layup question and not answer it properly.
Who's the weirdest actor you ever interviewed when you were working for Entertainment Tonight?
Oh, that's a good one. The weirdest actor. Whew. And all actors are kind of weird.
That's
a little
true.
Bit. My brother's an actor. You know, we all kind of, you know, all artists just think a little differently. The guy from The Big Bang Theory. Interviewed him. He was pretty interesting. We had a great conversation because he was such a sports guy, and I didn't think about which guy?
Johnny Galecki, the main one that was the old Russ from National Lampoon's, or who's the other guy? the tall guy that's kind of balding. He's like 50 years old, except he...
Jim Parsons?
Shelton.
Jim Parsons.
Shelton.
Yeah, he was pretty interesting. Yeah, we had a blast. I remember doing the ESPYs, and they're just ripping down the red carpet. And halftime, I didn't know half of them.
Yeah.
They're kind of feeding me in my ear what to say, what to ask. But overall, it was fun to talk to them about performance, because in athletics, we can score things. We have a winner and a loser. In acting, it's kind of, you decided I won an award based on your opinion.
Right.
And I felt that was very frustrating for a lot of actors, because you're judged by those awards, which is kind of unfair. And as a guy who's, I take acting classes as a broadcaster. I think it's really important to be trained how to listen. That's the biggest skill in acting. And in broadcasting, sometimes they teach you it's about you and how you perform and how you enunciate. And I don't think that's the case. I think at the Pac-12 Network, our job is to listen like our life depends on it to the people we're working with.
Did you meet Mario Lopez working there?
I didn't. Mario, he's an extra guy.
Oh.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes. Okay, because my next question was going to be, speaking of Mario Lopez, was A.C. Slater better at football or wrestling, in your opinion, back at Bayside?
You know what? I think in high school, I probably would have said football, but now as an analyst, kind of watching him move a little bit, okay, I think I'm going to go wrestling.
Okay.
Yeah. Not sure if I would draft him on my roster.
And finally, being a Pittsburgh Panther yourself during college, what's your order at Primanti Brothers?
Great call. It's a lot of fries. I'm a vegetarian.
Okay.
So I'm going to go with a lot of cheese, a lot of fries, a lot of slaw, which is pretty much it, and a bunch of napkins. A
lot of bread.
Yeah, a lot of bread. But the only rule is you can't touch a napkin till it's over. Like, you can do it late, but you got to just go to town, own the mess. And it's probably around 1:30, 2 in the morning.
Sure.
Which is all good. You're just, singing the fight song and, fight on for your old Pittsburgh, baby.
That's fantastic. Yogi Roth, Pac-12 Networks analyst. You can follow him on Twitter, at Yogi Roth. That's easy to remember. So, man, when are we going to do this again? When are you going to be back in NYC?
Hopefully for the Heisman.
Okay.
What I'd love to do, and you can help champion this, is for all those broadcasters whose job is to celebrate the game and make sure that they watch all the games and see all the talent, let's not have a repeat performance from Christian McCaffrey from 2 years ago,
yeah,
or even last year. I mean, this is the guy who still led the nation all-purpose yards. You can stay up a little late. It's okay.
Yeah.
Actually do your job and watch the games. And I'm excited. I, on a serious note, I think that this year, the depth in the Pac-12 is awesome. Not only on offensive quarterback, that's obvious, but the defenses are built. You're going to see some studs. I think it just keeps trending, and I expect SC and UW to play for the Pac-12 title and berth in the college football playoffs. So hopefully I'm back with one of those players here in New York in the studio for the Heisman, chewing gum.
I love it. Yogi Roth chewing gum with us here on the show. Fantastic spot. We love him around here. When we come back, your best sound of the day in soundcheck, and Mraz adds fuel to the fire of his flag football game coming up on Sunday. DA, CBS Sports Radio.
Welcome to Play It, a new podcast network featuring radio and TV personalities talking business, sports, tech, entertainment, and more. Play it at play.it.
Get zapped while the sun is out.
DA, how are you liking the new location so far, sir? I listen to CBS loyally on a regular basis.
DA on CBS Sports Radio.
Full episodes of The DA available on iTunes. So remember that if you ever miss anything or want to hear it again, like our interview with Yogi Roth, it's available on iTunes, DA On Demand. Just search DA CBS. You'll see it there. Subscribe for free. You'll get full episodes with very minimal commercial interruption. Also, all of our interviews are available in video form as well on our website, watchda.com. Coming up on Sunday morning at 10 a.m. Eastern time, it's simply known as the rematch. It's a grudge match to end all grudge matches. It is Mraz's Young Gun squad taking on Mr. Six's Small Blocks team. This is a divisional round playoff matchup. Winner moves on to the county championship as though it's still high school. And then after that, the two county region of Long Island plays in a Super Bowl. This is for the Class D, the fourth division of the Flag Football League. Yesterday, we taped the Permission Granted podcast, which is the podcast of the show about the show, which we tape weekly. And of course, discussion centered around this upcoming game. I will be out there to call the game live on Facebook Live video feed. So you'll be able to watch that beginning at 10 a.m. Eastern time on our Facebook page. Go to our Facebook page, like the show page.
Yeah, get my timeline popping.
You'll get the feed then on your timeline. That's facebook.com/TheDA Show. Do it now so you don't forget. So we taped the Permission Granted podcast, and I was just kind of picking the brain of Mraz about this game. I would have thought Mraz, having said all week, we're not going to say anything to the media, we're not going to do anything stupid here, we don't want to give them bulletin board material, would have played it very conservatively. Hey, they're a good team. Give me a lot of cliches. Good team. We're going to take it one game at a time. We know that we can be beat. It'll take our best effort on Sunday to win. But instead, Mraz can't help himself. And he told me he does not believe that the small blocks can win a championship. Do you think the winner of this game wins the Super Bowl in Class D?
I don't... All right, you're coaxing me into a comment here. If we win the game, we are winning the Super Bowl in D. I feel like this is our hurdle because we have seen the team that we would likely play in the county championship next, and we didn't have our best day against them. I'm happy with that. I don't think small blocks has what it takes to win a Super Bowl.
Really?
I think small blocks can beat us.
Even with Mr. Six?
Even with Mr. Six. I think small blocks can beat us, yes. I will not guarantee a victory, but I don't think they have the moxie after us and the emotions are coming off us to go win another two games, like win a county title and a Super Bowl.
Yeah.
Where we got the good stuff. Yes, if we win this game, we're going to go win a Super Bowl.
And audio courtesy of the PGP, the Permission Granted Podcast, available on play.it and other fine places the podcast is available. So, whoa, okay, Mraz saying they don't have the moxie to win a championship. Well, Mr. Six won't be happy about that. But Mraz then doubled down. Instead of walking it back and say, you know what, they're a good team. It's going to take our best effort. I'm not sure that, you know, we can match up with them. You know, just give them a little bit of love. Instead, he called them out and said the small blocks are undisciplined.
I just don't think they have the intestinal fortitude to pull that off in that spot. I've seen these teams. I know the deal. We do. Our mental makeup is better than the small box mental makeup. I saw them fight with each other after the game with us. And from what I understand from the game they played last week, there was more internal fighting even as they were winning. That's a combustible sideline and, quite frankly, a storyline that should be followed in the broadcast on Sunday.
Wow, so this is a volatile group.
Volatile group. It's a lot like Greg Hardy, you know, slamming a clipboard out of the coach's hand on the Cowboys sideline. You're going to get a lot of that in the small blocks, especially if we go up early.
So they're an undisciplined group, you're saying?
Yes, and I think that will come back to haunt them. If not versus us, at some point here, whether it's the conference title game or the Super Bowl.
So they're the Bengals revolting against Marvin Lewis.
Exactly, except the Bengals never won a wild card game and small blocks took care of business, which I'm a little stunned. I thought they would lose last Sunday.
You thought they were going to be one and done.
I did, because they'd already lost to NWX, and I thought mentally they would shut down, but they didn't. They didn't.
Mr. Six is going to torch you guys.
No, he's not.
He is going to have a huge game.
You know what? I think that's what's going to ruin them. I almost don't want to utter these words because I don't want them listening. I think they're going to force the ball to Mr. Six too much, and it's going to cost them all over the field. They're going to miss matchups and miss opportunities.
You have nobody to cover Mr. Six.
Yes, we do.
Nobody.
He had two catches versus us in the first game, too. He made it seem like he went all Chris Carter on us. They're in trouble, DA.
You got nobody as tall as him. You got nobody as fast as him.
Oh, we got speed.
No, you don't.
We got speed.
You don't have Mr. Six speed.
We got Bagels on the other end.
Who's Bagels?
Nick Gilley, young kid, 21 years old, just one player of the week with two touchdowns for us. Fast as lightning.
Mraz, what are you doing adding this much fuel to the fire?
What are you doing replaying this on the show?
It was already broadcast. It was on the PGP. Didn't your captain, aren't you the captain?
I am the co-captain with our quarterback, Flood, who issued a warning, no Facebook posts, no anything this week.
Yeah, Flood said on Monday, don't feed in.
You coaxed me in. I got caught up in a moment between friends where you forget microphones are on. I don't take anything back. I do feel that way, absolutely. But also, this is typical media twisting words and choosing headlines.
Okay.
Because I specifically stated in there, they can beat us. They absolutely can beat us. That should have been the headline there, that I'm not guaranteeing a victory. But instead, you make the headline, I say they can't win a Super Bowl.
You called them undisciplined.
They don't have the moxie.
You said that they cannot win a championship.
Let me ask you something. If you see after a game where a team loses and there are fists flying at teammates at each other, would you call that disciplined or undisciplined?
I would call that undisciplined.
Okay, so then what I said is accurate. They are two teams like that don't win championships.
Okay, but do you think the New England Patriots going to 7 Super Bowls and winning 5 say, Yeah, you know what? The Steelers can't beat us. You know what? They're undisciplined. The Ravens are undisciplined. They can't beat us. No. They say it's a good team. It's going to take our best effort.
Which, you know, I did say.
That you mixed in trashing them and that Mr. Six can't beat you guys. You guys have the answer for Mr. Six. You've already game planned how you think it's going to hurt them.
Which game plan is shot now if they're listening?
I mean, honestly, you've torched the whole thing on Sunday already.
I think you are out to get us, and I think you don't want the Young Guns winning a championship, which is a shameful because you're a pride of the Young Guns. You've worn through on the organization. You're doing all you can, and I see this is going to be a slanted broadcast, and I don't like it. And you are one day away, mister, from having no media availability to my players for the pregame show. I'm telling you right now.
Isn't this amazing? Mraz puts foot in mouth and then begins on the offensive that it's my fault, that I'm twisting things, it's a slanted broadcast. He's the one that says it, and that it's my responsibility. Amazing. Sure, Mr. Six is going to love hearing these sound bites. Oh, look, the Vegas line just changed. Went from Young Guns -4.5, now suddenly Young Guns -1.5. 3 points already just because those two sound bites got out. It's time for sound check.
CBS presents this program in color.
An educated person can't think he's going to get a recruit by strippers coming in.
They can fire you, but they can't eat you.
And they run through our ass like through a tin horn, man, and we could not stop them.
The audio you need to hear. It's DA Soundcheck.
Scooter Jeanette last night, 4 home runs.
Line drive, right field, ball carrying well. Home run! Scooter Jeanette, not one, not two, not three, but 4 home runs tonight for Scooter Jeanette, and 9 runs batted in. What a night for Scooter Jeanette. 12-0 Reds.
You talk about being locked in. He is locked in. That just doesn't happen.
Jim Kelch, Jeff Brantley, Reds Radio Network. It was 10 RBIs for Scooter Jeanette. This is a guy that was cut, put on waivers by the Brewers, picked up by the Reds. Hometown kid in Cincinnati, at home in Cincinnati last night with one of the greatest offensive single-game performances in Major League Baseball history. Magical last night. Jerry Remy on Nesson, part of the Red Sox broadcast, had a problem with Tanaka's translator for the Yankees coming out to the mound.
That was a relatively quick conversation. Larry Rothschild along with the translator.
Oh, that's what it was. I had that wrong. I thought it was the trainer going out there, but I forgot with Tanaka they take out a translator. I don't think that should be legal.
Seriously?
I really don't.
Jackie Bradley, 0 for 1. What is it you don't like about that?
Learn baseball language. You know, it's pretty simple. I mean, you break it down pretty easy between pitching coach and pitcher after a long period of time.
Yeah. God. Right. So, I'm sure Jerry Remy would feel the same exact way had he gone to play in Japan and the Japanese coaches came out and started talking a language he had no idea about. I'm sure he would have been totally fine without an English translator. Or do you think Jerry Remy would have enjoyed or would have even mandated, hey, if I'm going to play in Japan, I need somebody to tell me what the hell you guys are all talking about? You think that might be slightly intimidating or slightly a problem if you go to a country that doesn't speak your language and everybody's not speaking your language and you're like, I don't really know what you want me to do because I'm getting paid $20 million a year and I'm a little nervous about not doing the right thing. You think you might want somebody to make sure that you're doing the right thing out there? I mean, whatever. Old baseball guys never cease to amaze me with how stupid some of their old baseball thoughts are. And speaking of which, it's Mike Schmidt on WIP in Philadelphia talking about Odubel Herrera can't be a leader because, look at this, can't speak English.
My honest answer to that would be no, because of a couple of things. First of all, it's a language barrier. And, you know, because of that, I think he can't be a guy that would, you know, sort of sit in a circle with, you know, four or five American players and talk about the game, you know, or you know, try and learn about the game or discuss the inner workings of the game, you know, or come over to a guy and say, man, you got to run that ball out, you know, or some, you know, it just can't be, because of the language barrier, that kind of a player. But to build a team around a guy, he has to sprint every ball out like Chase Utley used to do. He has to be more of a, I want to say, a friend of every, not that he's not a friend, it's hard to describe what I mean.
Yeah.
The language barrier means a lot because his communication with his teammates is limited because of the language barrier. And so I don't think I'm disrespecting him by any means.
Well, here's the problem, as Ken Rosenthal pointed out. Odubel Herrera speaks English. I mean, that's the first problem with Mike Schmidt's analysis here. It's his second language, but he does speak English. And as Rosenthal pointed out, Latin players are leaders on a ton of clubs around the Major League Baseball circuit where English is their second language, like Adrian Beltre, Carlos Beltran, Albert Pujols, Edinson Volquez, Robinson Cano, Jose Bautista, Miguel Cabrera, Sal Perez, and maybe one of the most important leaders in baseball, Yadier Molina. Does anybody say Yadier Molina can't be a leader for the Cardinals because he's a Latin ball player? He doesn't speak perfect English, but he's the most important guy on that franchise for like 10 years. So sorry, Mike Schmidt. Clown comment, bro.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.